It's a Friday, and that means it's time to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STL Today. And this is brought to you by our good friends at Henderson and Watercutty, STLCriminalDefense.com, STLCriminalDefense.com. No matter how big or small the offense, check them out on their site, STLCriminalDefense.com. They're available 24/7, easily navigated site, STLCriminalDefense.com. As always, Ben Fredrickson, it's always good to hear your voice. Sports are back. That's a good thing. Hope you're doing well.
College football is going to be back here soon. How about adding that one to our list? This day, this Thursday, was like a sports marathon gauntlet. So we went from having nothing to having an overwhelming amount of sports to follow, but I'll take the latter, man. I'm doing well. Hope you're doing okay. You've been busy, my friend.
I've been very busy. I'm not complaining. I think it's been great. I love being back behind the microphone, calling Cardinals baseball, the good, the bad, the indifferent. Let's jump into the Cardinals. They split their doubleheader. Disappointed in the split. I thought that was clearly one for the taking. We start with game one. Yadi hits a home run on Roberto Clemente Day, and he rises to the occasion. That's the positive. They hit the home runs, and when the Cardinals score five runs, they're undefeated. It's that simple. They score five runs, they're undefeated because their pitching is that good, which tells me that if they get into postseason play, they're a dangerous team because their pitching is that good. They just have to get there, which I think that they will get there. But it was a disappointing split of that doubleheader yesterday.
Yeah, I think that losing that second game, the way the first game played out and they were up, you know, in the game two, that's probably one of their more frustrating losses of the season because they're not used to handing over a lead to the bullpen and seeing it go anywhere. You ended, of course, with injury concerns about Gallegos, who's got some sort of a groin issue. We'll know more about that this weekend, but that literally adds insult to injury. It's confusing to me. You know, you watch this offense and it can have a game like that where it goes bonkers in game one. It looks like they're hitting beach balls out there. And then they go into the second game and the offense wasn't the reason they lost that second game at all. I mean, they scored three runs and they handed over the lead to their bullpen, but it's just, it's crazy to see how they can go from hitting the ball out of the ballpark five times in that first game to, you know, the best they can hand their bullpen is a two-run lead going into the seventh, and then they go down so quietly to end the seventh, and you felt at that point the game had just completely flipped, and you saw some uncharacteristic things in that second game, right? The bullpen didn't hold. It's so good. It usually takes care of that, and you also saw some questionable defense. We've seen it's kind of becoming a low-key trend. Some odd throws from the outfield from both Lane Thomas and Harrison Bader. They got to get that cleaned up because they don't have any wiggle room, Dan. That if the offense can provide enough, then they have to rely on their defense and their pitching to be good. So, you know, it's kind of weird to talk about the offense on a day where they had that monstrous first game. But I think that those two games show the good and the bad of this offense. You never know when it can break out, but it just seems like there's too many games where it's they have to scratch and claw to get to three runs. And you said it, the number I look at is five. You know, they've got that undefeated record, the only one in baseball when they score five. Meanwhile, they've got about 30% of their games where they can barely get to three. And that just puts such a little wiggle room and such room, little room for error with your bullpen and your defense when you have that kind of an offense.
Yeah. The team can't go above 500. They can't go below 500, but yet that's where they're at with all the injuries, and they've had significant injuries. It's not like it's been just a couple of bench guys here or there, or bullpen guy here, or just one starter. These are significant injuries that they've been dealing with, and yet they're still hovering around, you know, the 500 mark, which in this crazy season, this truncated season, it's going to get them in, but yet still, it's just the way it is in 2020, isn't it?
Well, it's crazy. And one thing I'll say this, and you know, it's kind of almost a like a double-edged sword, right? And in that the Cardinals are defiant enough that we're all, you know, where a lot of us are going, okay, let's dig into this team more. And I think that's kind of the standoff going on right now about this team. And I certainly hear it when we talk to John Mozeliak, and you know, he says, look, I'm not analyzing this team critically and analytically right now because I'm literally worried about keeping our team healthy and not having a day where I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and find out that Johan Oviedo is not going to pitch for us, not going to make his next start because we got to put him under protocol to make sure he doesn't have COVID. He's like, I'm worried about that. So I'm not really worried about, you know, some of what other people are talking about. And I get that, but it's also the Cardinals are playing well enough that we get back into that mode of, okay, well, what are they doing? What can they do better? And what needs to improve? And it's like that wrestling match of what is fair game and what's not. And, you know, we're not used to saying a Cardinals season is just, just enjoy it for what it is. That's not what the Cardinals want. And it's not what any of the fans and any of the people who cover the team expect. So I think we're all kind of trying to figure out how to analyze this thing. So you try to be fair. I mean, I can't write about the lineup and its struggles at times without mentioning the fact that it didn't have Yadi for a stretch and didn't have Paul DeJong for a stretch, without mentioning that Dexter Fowler, who was one of the best hitting outfielders, is now out for not COVID, but a condition that could be made worse if he were to come into contact with COVID. So I think it's fair to analyze it, but you also have to take into account what's going on. And one thing I will say, and I don't mean this as just a pat on the back, this team doesn't give it an inch. I mean, they're not all that talented offensively. We knew that. We knew the bar was kind of low there with what they decided to do, kind of hope some internal options emerged. And they've got some problem areas there. But one thing I was looking at the other day, I mean, they're like top 10 in the league in pitches per plate appearance. They're grinding out these at-bats. Their defense is ranking one of the highest in all of baseball. You look at obviously what their relievers have done, the depth of that bullpen. I mean, they're still finding a way to go out and be a tough out. And I mean, I think I really do mean this. I think a lot of teams right now would have just completely folded over. But they just have to play so well in all areas to go on any sort of a winning streak. That's what the other thing they can't do is they can't go on a winning streak because their offense doesn't give them enough to win consistently. So they win three and they lose two and they're just one step forward, one step back. They're keeping their head above water. But if they're going to make any noise in the postseason, they've got to find a little more room to breathe.
So what is fair game? How do you judge it?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, to me, like, I think the offense is fair game if you involve all of the guys who haven't been a part of it. I mean, one of the things we're seeing with this offense is it's very similar to last year's, and that's not that surprising. They didn't make any changes really other than letting Marcell Ozuna go, and we haven't seen production from the outfield. I think they have a ton of pressure on their infield to produce offensively, and they don't have Matt Carpenter producing. Now he's just now kind of started to look like maybe he's starting to get things to click a little bit. And he's going to get, I mean, Mo has made it very clear he's going to get chances to play, and everybody's going to play. I mean, they probably played three times since we started this podcast. So everybody who's healthy is going to play. So that if he can get it going, then we'll find out. But that's, I mean, to me, the lineup, I think that's fair to look at. Because that was kind of the thing they put a lot of hope on. And now if they have everybody healthy too, and it starts to hit a little bit better, then maybe we adjust those concerns. But right now I see the same team, a team that pitches really well, a team that plays really good defense, but a team that has a lineup that isn't going to stack up very well with some of the big dogs in the league.
Back end of the bullpen. Boy, they bent, you know, you mentioned Fowler, they are missing Jordan Hicks, KK is out, you know, the right fielder.
John Brebbia.
John Brebbia.
Go all the way back, you know.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Carlos Martinez has missed significant time. Miles Michaelis is out. They have had significant losses to this team. And Gallegos is a massive one if he is out. I'm concerned about this one. This one's got my attention. All of them have my attention, but this one, if it's significant time, and we don't know, this one's got my attention because I'm not sure where you go with this. Is it going to be Gant? Is it going to be Helsley that gets time? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be Miller? You know, I don't know where you go with this one, because the one kind of certain that I felt like at the back end of games was Gallegos, and I'm just not sure where they go in that direction.
Yeah, that's getting pretty thin pretty quick in the bullpen there, and he has been such a reliable part of it. You know, I'm the biggest Luke Voit homer in the world.
Yes, you are.
I like Luke Voit a lot. I'm happy that he's having success, but I've told people, I said, you know, everybody wants to label that trade the Cardinals made as the Chase and Shreve trade, but people forget that Gallegos was in that trade, and he's been one of the National League's most reliable relievers since that deal, and this Cardinals bullpen would be in a bad place without him. So if he's going to miss significant time here with this groin issue, then they're going to be thrusting guys into uncertain roles. You know, it does make me wonder about Carlos. Could we be revisiting that conversation? It's tough to know what's fair. You know, we talk about what's fair. I don't know what's fair to think about Carlos Martinez right now. He's had two starts. Neither of them have been all that good, but they've both been against a really good Twins lineup.
But here's the thing, though.
They both come with this ton of time off in between. So I don't know. But if at some point you might need him more to be in the bullpen, I think.
But tell me, who's going to go in the rotation? You still have more doubleheaders coming up.
Yeah, just throw bullpen games at it, I guess.
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, it's not, you know, you had to get pretty deep in the weeds here to have depth concerns about Cardinals pitching, but here we are. And, you know, the depth across the board will be tested as these games continue to mount up. So, you know, there are times when you talk to Mike Schilt and you talk to Mo, and you think it's almost everything these guys can do to stop from saying, can you guys even understand how hard it is to even get out there and compete? And then it's like you try to explain that to people who go, well, what do you mean they're just playing baseball? It's like, well, first of all, playing baseball is hard, or else we'd all be doing it for a living. But the amount of stress, physical stress in terms of pitchers' arms and these innings that are adding up and these playing every single day, and then now there's no more off days, I do think there's a chance that there's a wall up ahead. And, you know, if this team can avoid it like it has, that's impressive. I said it and I stand by it. When they started kind of getting some wind beneath their wings a little bit after they returned from the outbreak, I said, if this team makes the postseason, even with it being an expanded playoffs, I think that's really impressive, because I think a lot of teams just kind of would have rolled over by now.
STL Criminal Defense brings you Ben Fred Fridays and the good folks at Henderson and Watercutty. Henderson and Watercutty, STLCriminalDefense.com. I have said the lineup is in a state of flux always. I think you know that what you get a catcher, first base, second base, and it's short. And if you're Mike Schilt, you play the hot hand. The hot hand right now is Tyler O'Neill. Bader struck out three times in game two last night. Right field, state of flux. Third base, state of flux. DH, I think you know if Miller is going to face a right-hander, he's your guy. Do you agree with that? I mean, if it's kind of the eye test and maybe some matchups and then roll them out. And at that point, that's what you go with your lineup.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Personally, I would have liked to see Dylan Carlson stay up. I think I'd rather see him try to figure it out than I'd rather see him try to figure it out as much as any of these guys in the outfield. And Tyler O'Neill's got it going now, so play him. But a week from now, he could be in Harrison Bader's shoes. I mean, a week ago, it was Harrison Bader who was the hot hand. There's not going to be, I don't think, a consistent hot hand in this outfield. You know, Lane Thomas can hit a home run for you time again. He might go on a bit of a tear. He better start hitting, or else some of those curious throws he's making in the outfield are going to get him sat down. You know, and they could put Edmund out there too. But I would have just liked to see Carlson be in that rotation as a guy who's, you know, just needs to play. I don't know what all he's going to find out down in Springfield. You know, they're not really playing games down there. They're doing simulated stuff. I'd much rather see him get a pinch hit at bat than Austin Dean. I don't think Austin Dean's going to have a long future with this team. So I'm a little confused about that. But yeah, I mean, you play who's hot, and then you're going to have to play everybody because there's going to be days like today where you're playing too. So, you know, one thing that would help a lot would be Matt Carpenter getting some sort of a tear. Now, look, I get people who are frustrated with Carpenter, and I'm not going to sit here and say the contract's been good. It's been bad. The extension has been, and it's going to be a huge conversation point this offseason. I'm not going to do anything about it now, but they're also going to play him now. And if he can find some sort of traction, that could really make a difference for them as well. But having, you know, some sort of production from the outfield, whether it's Tyler O'Neill or Bader can get going again, or even Thomas, they've got, you know, they were the only team in baseball, Dan, to start their outfielders 7, 8, 9 in the lineup on opening day. And they were back to doing it again the other day. That's so hard. That is an anchor on your lineup when you're not getting, you know, any of those guys performing to a point where you can have them in a key spot in the lineup. If you look around other teams in the league, outfielders are leading off. They're hitting fourth. They're hitting second or third. It's very hard to find a team that doesn't have two outfielders in its top five. And the Cardinals are hitting them 7, 8, 9, which that's hard. I joked the other day that, you know, that little field that they've got at Roger Dean Stadium, that Ozzie Smith infield, you know, it doesn't have an outfield. You know, if the Cardinals played on one of those, they'd win a World Series because they've got all their production primarily coming from the infield, and they're pitching and they're catching. You know, but they've gotta find some answers there. And I think that's where a lot of the attention is gonna be, is can there be someone who can step up in that outfield mix? And that's partly why I wanted to see Carlson be a part of it, because out of all those guys out there, his future is probably the brightest.
Yadier Molina, that was a pretty cool moment, was it not? Wearing number 21.
Absolutely.
And hitting that home run on what is Roberto Clemente Day in St. Louis, because we missed it yesterday or 2 days ago, and we got it yesterday.
I'm kicking myself that I didn't take my life savings and go and put them on the sports book for Yadier Molina to hit a home run when he was wearing that jersey. Because looking back, of course he was going to.
Pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, of course he did that, and that's just Yadi, man. I mean, he goes big in big moments. I mean, you and I have talked a lot about Lou Brock. I've written about him this week. You talked about him on the air eloquently, and I'll be there for the, you know, the ceremony on Saturday. But, you know, talk about a guy who went big in big moments. Yeah, that's what Yadi does. And you could tell when he hit that home run that it was a special one to him, and he's had some big ones. I mean, besides that, Dan, at some point we're going to start talking about how laughable it's going to be, this rhetoric and this, all this talk, you know, hot take sports talk radio and Twitter fights that were wasted on the fact of Yadier Molina, is he going to get into the Hall of Fame or not? I mean, the arguments against Molina making the Hall of Fame because of his bat are going to be outdated by the time this guy's done playing. It's going to be hilarious to look back at some of this stuff.
He's closing in now on 2,000 hits. I mean, he's going to get that, I think, this year, and barring something that would preclude him, you know, like an injury or something, he's going to get that this year. He's now in the top 10 of home runs. He just passed... Yeah. I think, what was it, Simmons and runs batted in, past Johnny Mize in home runs in Cardinals history. I mean, there's a lot of huge milestones that he's getting.
His next double, I think he's going to – is his next double going to tie Johnny Bench?
Yeah. I mean, these are – so, he's got all the gold gloves, the platinum. So the
World Series, championships. Yeah, I mean, the fact that every other Hall of Famer will vouch for him. It's going to be – I mean, we're talking –
Well,
hopefully
to me,
we're still doing this podcast at that time, but I really think it's going to be one of those things where you can look back at some of the arguments made against him, and they're going to look terrible in hindsight.
But I think when he gets 2,000 hits, that's the final punctuation. That's the exclamation point for the Hall of Fame. I really do. 2,000 hits as a catcher.
Yeah, I think that's. I think, and it's going to happen. I mean, the other thing I look at, and this isn't for his Hall of Fame case, but it is interesting to me. This was pointed out by my buddy Jonathan, who does some of the Cardinals scoring stuff. He said the if you look up the offensive, and this is just a fun for Cardinals fans, look at a kicker, this, go look at the offensive WAR of Yadier Molina since Albert Pujols was signed with the Angels, and compare Albert Pujols's offensive WAR with the Angels to Yadier Molina's with the Cardinals since that deal happened, since Pujols signed his new contract. You might be surprised with what you find there. I mean, he's somehow found a way to get better offensively in the era of his career in which he's not supposed to. mean, the knock on him was that his bat was never all that good and that it was going to fade even more as he aged into his 30s. And instead, he's reversed that, and he's gotten become a better, more substantial, more impactful clutch hitter as he's gotten older, which it's a tribute to his work. It's a tribute to his mind as a baseball player, and just his dedication, because he's willed himself into being a better hitter when usually guys on that side of their career are going in the wrong direction.
In terms of baseball, it's going to be interesting, but baseball, and Bob Nightingale reported this yesterday, but they're going to go into a bubble, and it might happen even before the postseason gets here, but postseason teams might go into a bubble to make sure they're protected going into postseason play. I think it's a smart move. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably wise, just based off of what we've seen work for the NBA, for NHL. Don't risk it. Get in there and lock it down. And I think the players would be in agreement with that now. They were against the idea of the bubble earlier with a shorter amount of time, and they've also seen the success that it's had in other sports. I think we're going to see, too, a very clear difference in postseason play. I mean, these guys, I think, now are playing under the idea of, okay, everybody's pretty much going to get in. And I think we're going to see kind of a different level of play once postseason games begin, because there are going to be those three-game series. I think they'll be managed differently. I think guys on good teams will know that they can't just show up and mail it in, because they'll get beat and they'll be done. So I think there'll be a higher level of play in the postseason. I think there'll be guys more willing to go into that setting. So I'm all for it. Sign me up. I hope I get to go if that's the case. I'll be ready to bubble up and cover it, because I do think, you know, where the Cardinals are right now, they're going to be in it.
Wainwright goes tonight. I look at he and Goldschmidt being the MVPs of this team. I'm sure you probably feel that way. Now, Goldschmidt plays every day, but when you look at when Wainwright has pitched, it's been the times when the team needs a pick-me-up, and he's been there. I you know, it's just been the opportune time for him to step up and be big, and he's answered the bell just about every single time.
Yeah, I think absolutely you can give that to Adam Wainwright, pitcher-wise, and Goldschmidt, position player-wise. And Goldschmidt might tell you to give it to Wainwright in full. You nailed it, the moments. And when they've needed him, he's delivered. We're just sitting here talking about how the bullpen is on thin ice. Every time the bullpen has been on thin ice, he's stepped up and carried the load. He's in a special place right now. He's pitching with full confidence, and he and Yadi are locked in. And you know, too, that he's going to have something special in mind, because he loved Lou Brock and had a great relationship with Lou Brock. And I imagine that will be on his mind as he takes the mound, kind of, you know, with that as his motivation. So I know that, I'm sure you know this story, but for folks who didn't get a chance to see it, you know, Wainwright told that awesome story about the first day he was at spring training as a Cardinal after he was traded from the Braves. And he looks up and there's Lou Brock coming across the clubhouse with a baseball and asks for Adam's autograph. And Adam says, more or less, don't you think it should be the other way around? and Lou Brock says, no, I know you're going to be special and I want your autograph. And he just talked about what that meant to him, you know, to have someone like that rooting for him. So, and those are just one of their many conversations over the years. So I think he'll be fired up for that too. And I would bank on, you know, if we have to predict it, it will be, he might get some turbulence early and then he'll lock it in and cruise, because that's what he's been doing every time out since.
The passing of Lou Brock, will wrap it up with this. And the more and more with, as the days go by since his passing, it's been a handful of days, but man, the outpouring of just emotion and people in and out of sports that love Lou Brock, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it keeps hitting me in different ways. You know, I didn't obviously get to watch Lou Brock. I knew him as Lou Brock, the Hall of Famer, and I think a lot of people in my generation know Lou Brock as Lou Brock in the red jacket, not Lou Brock running the bases like Wild. But it's cool that he's meant so many different things to so many different people over the course of so many generations. It's cool that he embraced all of that, you know, that he was one of the most gracious giving people in our community when it comes to, you know, the attention and the autographs and the photos. He never turned any of that down. I was struck. It was Thursday evening going to the ballpark. You know, our world's upside down. It seems like so many times there's so much division and we see signs of it everywhere, you know, from things, you know, protests in the streets, demonstrations to all these different things. And you go walk by Bush and there's Lou Brock's statue and it's covered in tributes, cards, baseballs, wreaths, flowers, gifts, little trinkets. And it's like, man, you know, with all this chaos that's going on, this many people came down here to, you know, spend time at a statue that represents this player. I mean, that's an incredible thing to see that and then understand that it happened in the vortex of what we're all going through. What a life, what a tribute, and just incredible, man. I think there's all, whether you play baseball or whether you manage a business or are an employee, whatever you do, you can learn something from Lou Brock, man. I mean, you can learn his toughness, his willingness to love people back who loved him. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can incorporate his lessons into your life.
Always great stuff, man. Appreciate it. And it's nice to have sports back. That's all I can say. And well put about Lou Brock, and we'll catch you up next Friday. Thanks for doing this.
All right, I guess we should have broken down like the two deep of the all the NFL teams or something. We'll get to that next week. I know you're watching all those NFL games.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. It'll be exciting when I do.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ben. You bet.